Channel Islands Restoration, you would think, would be on the Channel Islands, but apparently they have branched out. It's an organization that deals with ecological restoration projects in sensitive areas in California. And it's run by Ken Owen, an executive director. There's quite a number of staff people. And today's guest is the operations manager, Doug Morgan, who actually got his bachelor of science degree focusing on green and sustainable enterprise development. He grew up in Goleta. He left, came back in 2014. He was committed to volunteering 200 hours per year. And on his first volunteer trip, he went to Santa Rosa Island. He fell in love with the Channel Islands restoration mission. The people that work there and the work that, you know, he kept showing up volunteering that they got a restraining order. Oh, no, they actually hired him. Welcome to Radio Real Estate, Doug Morgan.
Oh, thanks for having me on. And yeah, it was a choice between the restraining order and hiring me, and they went with the hiring me. Thanks for both of that. Yeah.
It was probably cheaper to hire you rather than get the restraining order.
I would imagine it is, and it just makes for better PR, too.
Now, we're going to talk a little bit about this this backcountry trip. This is the way I learned about you, because you took my 21-year-old niece, who's going up to school at Berkeley, and she came back down to Santa Barbara where she grew up, and you went on, I think it was 3 nights, and you gave her a walking stick and a bottle of water and told her to fend for herself? Isn't it kind of harsh, isn't it?
It was a little bit more catered than that, actually, but essentially you got it right. We're out for 5 days and 4 nights on the Upper San Ynez watershed. That's an area that's been closed to the vehicular traffic of general public for about 2 decades now. Right behind the Front Range in Santa Barbara exists this really nice watershed that nobody gets to go into anymore. Some bikers and backpackers get down there, but you have to be pretty hardy to get in and out. So we're taking groups of volunteers in on an every other week basis. And we go up and we climb these watersheds, and then we're looking for a target plant, an invasive species called Tamarisk racemosina is this specific variety that's taking over the watersheds up there.
Okay, now we're going to get into why you did this trip, and I'm glad you explained it was 5 days and four nights. I didn't realize you're doing this every other week, and maybe later we'll find out if people want to get involved, what they can do. And what did you say the name of the watershed was?
It's the San Ynez River from the headwaters down to Gibraltar Reservoir, which provides a lot of the drinking water for Santa Barbara.
Okay. Now, before we get into this, and really what sparked this whole interview was that I heard that you went out with these volunteers, you took my 21-year-old niece, put her in great danger, you had a dog that came along that's trained to find rattlesnakes, that's owned by a rabbi, and that also intrigued my interest. We'll have to have the rabbi on sometime. But you did all this to go after one plant, an invasive species. So we're going to get into talking about that. But just before we get into all the details of this hike and what you did in this plant, which is just wild to me that this kind of effort is being spent to eradicate this plant. Amazing. Give me a little thumbnail sketch of the Channel Islands restoration project.
That particular project is funded by National Fish and Wildlife in cooperation with the Los Padres National Forest. And it's the fourth grant we've received along those same lines with a similar scope of work, essentially going into very sensitive areas, generally around endangered species, federally listed endangered species, and to remove this plant from the watershed. The reason why the upper San Ynez, one of the reasons why it is closed to general public vehicular traffic, is because of the Arroyo toad, a federally listed endangered species. There's also some other sensitive and threatened species that are making their homes in that area, trying to make a living out there. And it's a really popular flyway for a few federally listed bird species as well in that area. So we've all been trained up by some of the experts in the field, especially the Arroyo toads and red-legged frogs, and on how to enter into their environments and not be part of the problem, but to be part of the solution. Is that about what you were thinking? Is that enough background on that?
Yes, that actually gave me a good background on this overall project. I didn't realize that basically you're funded in this particular case by the National Fish and Wildlife. So, but I was also looking to get a little bit of a sense of the maybe that does help define for me what Channel Islands Restoration is. It's a group of volunteers and staff that take projects that need to be done, and you hike out, and you're basically working for the government.
Yes, we work for, and then the rest of our projects, we work for a variety of different entities, from private owners to national level organizations, other nonprofits, cities, county, state level organizations as well.
Perhaps
backing up just a second there, we are very good at bringing people safely in and out. We didn't just give her a stick and go. So safety is like the primary priority when we're out in the wild, because we do enter into places where there are some hazards, and we've gotten pretty good at mitigating them. The rabbi is actually our senior ecologist who has the snake dog that's not trained to find the snakes. It's trained to help me avoid the snakes. And he's very good at it so far. He's kept me alive so far. So
That's impressive. And perhaps I misspoke when I said you were funded by the government, but when you mentioned the National Fish and Wildlife, I just saw them as a government agency, but maybe they're not. But so thanks for explaining that you work for different entities, and they ask you to perform tasks that need to be done. And in this particular task, my guest here is Doug Morgan. He's the operations manager of the Channel Islands Restoration Project. And we're talking about how my 21-year-old niece left college in Berkeley, and for 5 days and four nights with Doug as the ringleader. I personally told her to look out for spots for us to build some condominium complexes out in the backcountry. Did she tell you that?
There's a lot of land back there that is never going to be developed. Yep.
so you get these group of people. What is with this plant that you would have this kind of an effort to go out, find the plant? What is the problem with the plant, and how do you eradicate the plant?
Good question. The plant is familiar to everyone. Everyone's seen it. They just probably haven't. Not everyone's identified it. Its common name is salt cedar, and it grows primarily in arid locations, in riparian zones, riverbeds, and deltas. It can grow rather large, to about 30 feet tall. It has small, scaly leaves that resemble an evergreen, but it's a deciduous tree, so those little scaly leaves fall off every year. It uses a tamarisk bush that's about 10 feet tall, can suck up out of the groundwater or the stream 200 gallons of water a night and flash it off in its evapotranspiration process. There's millions of these things. I think on that trip we killed 3,700 that your niece was on. So figure 3,700 times the potential of 200 gallons a night, and you're up around 60-something thousand gallons of water that we took out on a five-day trip is now back in the aquifer or back in the stream beds. So everybody that uses water is pretty concerned about getting these things out of our watersheds, including the water companies and pretty much every citizen. You know, we all know that there's a water issue here. So the salt cedar, the tamarisk, sucks up all this water, an inordinate amount of water. I mean, a native plant of the same size will use maybe a tenth of that a night or less. So it's using 20 times the 10 or 20 times the amount of water that native vegetation uses. And it's a pretty plant. It has a big billowy pink blossom in the springtime that turns white after the seeds are fertilized. It can produce a 10-foot high tamarisk, can produce a 500,000 seeds a year. They're primarily transported through wind and water location, but they do stick to animals as well and can go way up these watersheds. Another bad part about the tamarisk is because it's taking so much water out of the ground, a lot of the mineral salts that are in the ground are deposited in the vegetation. When that vegetation falls, the mineral salts create a hypersalinated halo around the plant that only tamarisk can germinate in. So it's capitalizing on all the resources, the water, the light. It's making the ground sterile for native vegetation to germinate in. It's sucking up a ton of water. Nothing eats it here. It's originally from the Mediterranean area, and nothing eats it in North America. It takes forever to decompose because we don't even really have any bacteria that breaks it down. And it's a fire hazard. It's also extremely flammable. Even in the green stages, it'll burn pretty readily. So we want to get rid of it, and it's all over. There's billions of them from this area southward. There's billions of them.
Well, how about how many do we guesstimate there are in the backcountry, in the back hills of Santa Barbara?
On our first grant through, we were working up on the Sisquoc River, which is another river in Santa Barbara County. It's about 10 miles as the crow flies from downtown Santa Barbara across two mountain ranges, and no one ever goes there. It's the other wild and scenic river in the area, and nobody ever goes there. Well, we will be going there on December 2nd with another volunteer group, but we took out, I think, 5,000 adults in that first grant and almost 100,000 seedlings, and we know we didn't get them all. So that gives you an idea. Over about 20 river miles or 25 river miles that we surveyed and treated, we got, 105,000 potential full-grown tamarisk trees.
Okay, now, is it salt feeder? Is that the term?
Yes.
Salt feeder, and then the other term is, what are you saying, tamarind?
Tamarisk racemosina, yeah. That's the Latin.
Oh, good. We'll stick with salt feeder. My guest is Doug Morgan, operations manager for the Channel Islands Restoration. And for those of us that sometimes scoff at some of the efforts of the community, the green community, and this is a sounds like a very bona fide problem that's sucking up all this water. And the people, I'm shocked. Doug took a group. Was it four or five people total, including you?
On that trip, we had a lot of cancellations right before we went out, and I believe it was just Ava and another volunteer that comes back on a regular basis, Sherry, and then me and my GIS tech, Aaron. And then we had a wrangler come in who prepared all the meals for us and hauled our gear on mule trains.
And are you looking for people to volunteer to help with this project?
Absolutely.
And yeah, what would someone do? Just Google Channel Islands Restoration?
Yeah, they can go to our website. It's all lowercase letters, and it's cirweb.org, and then there'll be an awful lot of stuff about how to get involved in a variety of different ways. Trips I refer to as backpacking light. We go in with just carrying our day packs, and all our heavy gear is on the mule backs. And then when we get to camp, the outfitters feed us. We set up our tents, have a nice sleep, go out and work all day, come back to a nice meal. It's a way to get in deep into the backcountry without having to carry your whole house on your back.
Right. So you got a guy preparing meals, you got a mule, you're doing something, you're murdering a plant that's sucking up water, 200 gallons a night, and on this one trip, you said you killed 3,700 of these plants?
I think that's what we got on that first trip, yeah.
Do you keep count? Yeah. Did someone get the highest kill rate? Do you give out awards?
We've done that in the past, actually, but everybody got mad at me for winning all the time. So I'm either the best killer of tamarisk or the worst counter of kills in tamarisk.
Okay. Channel Islands Restoration, the initials are CIR. And the website is cirweb.org. I'll also post it at radiorealestate.com when we put up the podcast. So Doug Morgan, operations manager, is my guest. And he took my 21-year-old niece, who's kind of tough. And she that's a hell of a thing. How do you kill these plants? We're talking about the saltpeter plant that can consume 200 gallons of water a night. How do you kill them, and then what do you do with them once, whatever you do to them? You just leave them there?
Yeah. Because of the remoteness of the location, and also because of the sensitivity of the environment, we'll literally cut them off with loppers or saws, hand saws, because they're generally in wilderness areas, and then place them far enough up on the bank where none of the cut material is ever going to come in contact with water again, because it can grow out of every part of the plant, can start a new plant. That's one of its strategies for reproduction. They oftentimes get pushed down into the stream bed and partially buried by new materials coming down on high rain events, and then that plant will grow a new plant and a new root system every 6 inches along the part that got buried. So they reproduce very well through clonal reproduction like that.
So
and then we do an application of a very selected application of herbicide to the cut stump to make sure that it draws the back down into the roots, because the other strategy salt cedar has for protecting itself and surviving these flood events and these scouring events is it will snap off the above ground growth at just right below grade level, and then the root will start a new plant, and the above ground stuff will get buried a mile downstream and start another plant too. So it's got like a lizard tail effect with the roots, where the root snaps off and gives up the plant, and then they both become plants.
Lovely. Maybe you should figure out a way to get something from the plant and make something out of it, and you could sell it. It would be a very rare indeed. I'm trying to kill a potato bush plant that grew way too big, and I cut it down to the stubs, and I read that if I there's some avocado trees nearby, so I don't want to use poison, and I read if I drill holes into it and mix Epsom salt, high concentration of Epsom salt with water, that would kill it naturally. I don't know if you ever heard about that.
Yeah, actually, we have the same type of project going on up in Ojai right now, where the city of Ojai is removing some eucalyptus trees from their green space. And one of the methods they wanted to try was real similar to what you just described. It will work, but you can't. It's not a once-and-done situation. You have to reapply it a couple different times. But it does work.
That's what I read, you know, maybe three or four times, but I'm in no hurry. It's down to a stub. It's not in anybody's way. And I'll just eventually, it'll just go to, I smashed my pinky so bad, I almost broke my pinky trying to cut it out with an axe and a pickaxe. So then I walked away and decided to try it the easy way. Doug Morgan, operations manager, has been my guest today out of Channel Islands Restoration. And if you are game, you like to go out in the wilderness, you want to volunteer and help him and his organization kill the saltpeter plant that's consuming 200 gallons a night of water, you can go online to the Channel Islands Restoration and find out how to volunteer. Doug Morgan, thanks for taking care of my niece, and thanks for doing what you're doing. I appreciate you coming on today.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to get the message out, and I wish you good luck in the rest of your day.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You too. Mark Schneidman's, thank you. Oh, and I meant to tell him, too late, right? He's gone. Doug, you still there?
Yeah, I am.
I read November 22nd, 2021, front page of the LA Times about two Stanford students that went on a 7,400-mile trail hike journey. And if you didn't hear about that, check it out. It's on the front page of the LA Times.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Maybe you could get them to volunteer. Okay, thanks, Doug.
Sounds like my kind of people.
There you go. There you go. Thanks, Doug.
All right, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye. Bye-bye. Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate. See, if I was talking to Ava's dad, Frank, he would have hung up immediately. When you talk to Frank on the phone, you try to say goodbye, and he's gone. But Doug hung in there, so thank you, Doug. Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, radiorealestate.com. We'll take a quick break. And, you know the expression, George Washington slept here? Mm-hmm. Well, his house just sold. The Mount Vernon house, not the Mount Vernon I grew up in New York, but the estate in the Washington, D.C. region. We'll tell you about that when we return.